Laura joined the board, that's why.
Yeah, so we're going to start on the tests. Just to review real quick what we're talking about over here. So let's see here. This doesn't look familiar at all.
Trying to figure out who the Mishnah goes like.
Today's Lamed Tes, yeah?
You got the right Masechta?
I think I got the right Masechta.
What do we want here today?
Come on in.
Something in the social hall.
Come on down.
In the social hall.
Come on down, doctor. Right, so we had two Mahalchim. One was I think that what we're focused here is on two Amoraim, Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. So Rav was learning that the Mishnah was coming out like a mayor. That's what we said. That's what we ended yesterday, and it was Hechnis Lachatzer Beis Hashmira, and therefore he can't eat it, even if you're right. And then we have Rabbi Yochanan said, it was Rabbi Yehuda. And we had Rabbi Yehuda says that a person who sends the Tani Kain, I don't know if I did the Tani Kain, I'll do it again. The Tani Kain at the top of Lamed Tes, the Tani Kain, the Brisa teaches us the Shita of Rabbi Yehuda in an indirect way. Because it says, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm in B'Shem Reb Elazar ben Azayah, Af HaShaleach. Af hasholeach lachaveira atonim u'shsolim achavilei tilson. But if you're going to send your friend these are special exceptions to the rule. Now the Gemara is going to explain in a second. Just be aware of it that this is a special exception. These things people used to send b'tivlon. They used to send it without taking off any meiser or truma at all. Nothing. Lo yechalat shi'aser. That was the way people send it. So, what's the point? So he's sending his friend a gift. Okay, sending them a gift renders them obligated in Mysras. So that's Rabbi Yehuda Shita. Rabbi Yehuda holds from Rav Elazar ben Azayah, and when you send something to your friend, which is roi to be sold in the market, that's considered nigmur malachto, and therefore you have to take maizes from them. But if it would be unfit for the market, then Rabbi Yehuda would agree that sending them as a gift does not render them obligated in tithes. In other words, that was the point of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan was trying to tell us that even though we had earlier on in the Masechta that Rabbi Yehuda holds, if you send a gift, you have to take off Maisras. But that's only if it was Nigmar Malachto. But if it was Lo Nigmar Malachto, then it's not true. Okay? And so we're proving that from this Brisa. And Reb Shimon, we're going to explain this a little bit more now. Reb Shimon ben Lakish Amar Afilu Chaver Shishil Chaver Tzarchaser. He says that this would be true even if it was one Chaver sending to another Chaver, because even though a Chaver normally is any Moitz Mitach Ziyad Dover Shein Vesukin, but over here, since this was the Minhag, that everybody sent this stuff without taking off anything, so Chavrai by that, they don't understand. Nicha Amar is Chasher, we understand. And Amar is Chasher, but Chaver Chasher? What's going on that the chaver you have to take it? As far as truma is concerned, the am haaretz is also like a chaver, but yet we're calling it tevel, which means that you even have to take off truma. So obviously this is a little bit of a different animal. There was this custom developed that these items that we just mentioned, people would send without taking off anything. And therefore, even both Chaver and Amoretz, nobody would take off anything, even Truma. And Chazonish does not know, in footnote 14, he says, he's at a loss to explain how this custom came about. It doesn't make sense. Okay. Let's go on a little further. So if you uproot a turnip, so we said, we explained in the Mishnah that if you uproot a turnip, that you have to take off maizes, because if you're going to replant it, you're going to be planting it for seed. The turnip will rot, and you're being mafsed the maizes, so therefore you have to take before you replant it. That's what we explained. Now the Gemara is now going to say that there's other cases like that, which are also very similar. Lav shanyahi. And it's not any different the following cases, which is Bein Lazara, which we mentioned already. That means to say you're replanting it for the purpose of producing seed. Bein Lehefker, even if you're replanting it and your intention is to be mafkarit. Bein Lechutz Laretz, even if you're going to replant it and you're going to end up replanting it outside Eretz Yisrael. In other words, in all these cases, what's going to end up happening is you're going to end up with a result which is not chayv and meiser. Either it's going to be hefker, it's going to be chutz laretz, or it's going to be seed. All these cases, you're going to end up with something. So you're being mafkiet from meiser. So therefore, no matter what, in all these cases, in the interim, after you oiker it from the ground, you have to be to take off meisers. So the Gemara says, Taman Taninon, the Gemara is now going to have a contradiction. That in the Mishnah in Peah it says, 21, it's that Marmakam is Peah 1:6. That it says, Lo'ilam hu naisim mishum Peah. Lo'ilam means no matter what. In other words, there's no cutoff in time. You're supposed to leave Peah while it's standing. If you forgot to leave it while it's standing and you cut it, you leave it on the ground, you give it that way. If you forgot to give it then and you ground it up, give it then. If you made it into a challah, you got to give it then. Now, there's one distinction, of course, and that is once you do miruach, you have to take off the trumas and maestros before you give the oni, the payers. Because even though prior, yeah, but we say you have to make it up.
You have to make it up.
Yeah, you have to. The aniyim don't lose. You owe them that money.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So it says over here, that's the idea of la'olam. The oilam who knows him, you shouldn't pay it. That's the idea. You're always, no matter how late in the game it is, you don't gain. You're going to have to give. Upatman amaisa san shem yareach, which is what I just told you. After miruach, you have to give. For nois him, you shouldn't have care. And you can declare it ownerless. Upatman amaisa san shem yareach, the same halacha. In other words, if you decide after miruach to be mafkir your payers, it's not going to help. Your hefker is not going to not be mafkia the payers from maestros, because it reached the stage of miruach prior to the hefker. Okay, so it's either way. It works two ways. It's number one, you really are not allowed to be mafkir it since you got to miruach. You're not allowed to say it's hefker. That's number one. And number two, if you did say it was hefker, you're mechayev to be mafresh right away before someone else is zeicher, right? So we've got a stira here. What's the stira?
He can make a mafresh in the future. What's
that?
He can be mafresh meiser by making it after before the fact, just like with the other thing.
Say that again. I didn't understand what you said.
Make in our the stira is in one case you can't make it hefker because you're being mafsid to maestros, and in this case you can. Nosei mishum hefker, and you can make something pater from maestros, but you said before you can't.
Right. So I can hear you saying this. In other words, the Tana of the Tosefta says the very opposite of the Mishnah, for he rules that one who intends to relinquish ownership of the sets, even though they have not been processed. That's the point, like you're saying. Before, we were saying that even if it was lohigil lo'ainas maestros, it wasn't reached miruach, you still have to be mafresh the maestros before you mafker it. And here we're saying it's only after you get to the miruach that you have to be mafresh. That's the stira. Very good.
Can you say it this way?
Yeah, That's 25, he speaks it out very clearly. The Gemara has posed a contradiction between the ruling of the Tosefta, which forbids one to declare untithed produce ownerless even before the Gemara Malacha, and the ruling of the Mishnah in Peah, which permits one to do so. Yeah, that'll be the steer. Okay. So the Gemara answers the distinction between the two cases. Tamon in the Mishnah in Peah, hu mafkir al hakol. You mean mafkir everything. You're completely relinquishing ownership of the whole output of the ground. The payah part. I'm talking about the payah part. But I mean by the whole part, I mean the whole plant. It's the whole plant. Baram Hacha, but over here, he's not being mafkir the ikker plant. He's just being mafkir the output, that is to say the seeds that are going to grow subsequently. That's what I'm being mafkir. Okay? Baram Hacha hu mafkir al hagidulin. He's renouncing ownership over the
not the
shtila itself. So therefore, it's much more of an it's more obligatory on you, even if it's before Gemara Malacha, to be mafkir. That's what it says here. It says here in 27, he intends to keep the sets themselves, but replant them in an ownerless place so that their subsequent growth will be ownerless. And then he gets into the details over here a little bit. He's talking, well, we'll just read it real quick. Although when the plant grows, it'll be impossible to distinguish between the original set and the subsequent growths, right?
So then they'll all be after?
So they exist in theory as different sections of the new plant. The weight of the new growths can be calculated by subtracting the weight of the original set from the weight of the fully grown plant. When the fully grown plant is harvested, the new growth will be exempt from maaseris because it's hefker, while the original set will become obligated. But if at that point the new growths are larger than the original set, right, you've got rov, and it'll be batal. Hagidulin rabin al ha'ikar. That's the lashon of the Gemara Nedarim, that the gidulin are a rov, and therefore the Iker will also be bottle.
No, I'm not following the efficiency. What's the case?
So the case is I went ahead and I replanted it.
Right.
But I replanted and I said that whatever is going to come out of this replanting will be hefker.
Okay.
So whatever grows from it is hefker. Since what grows?
Anything new
that grows from it will be hefker. That is going to end up being a majority because you're going to have a full plant that has grown now with seeds and everything. Right. All you had originally was just some stalks. So it's obviously much larger. So the Rabu Hagidulin al Ha'ikar.
Oh, so the Ikar becomes
Hefker. The Ikar should
become
Hefker as well, or at least Potter from Mises. That's what he says over here. If at that point the new growths are larger than the original set, the Tevel status of the original set will be nullified under the principle of Bittel. Right? The owner is thus viewed as intending to remove pre-existing maaser obligation, which is certainly forbidden. Therefore, he may not replant. In other words, he's being masber, the blumdus behind it. So you really, that's why Chazal was so machbid that you be mafresh the maasers before you replant it, because by so doing, you're ending up being oiker the chi of maaser from something that really was obligated, because now it's going to become batel berov. So that's why they were makba. That's what he's explaining here.
So there was growth on it when you replanted it, just a little bit.
Yeah, it grew. It grew to a point.
To a point, and then you take it out and then you replant it, and right. You say anything from that point on.
It's hefker.
More, so it's
correct.
Gotcha.
That's right.
Gotcha.
That's exactly right.
Why? Excuse me. Why is the new growth? Oh, he was.
He's saying the new growth is going to be
hefker. Makdish, or he was mavat. What did he do? He made an hefker.
The new growth becomes hefker at the time that I planted it.
He made it that way.
I
right?
said whatever grows now is going to be hefker.
But he already has a potential chia for meiser, and that you can't get rid of, and so that's why.
You can through bittul.
But
the chachamim don't want you to do that.
Right.
That's why even though there's no gemara melacha, you still have to take the meiser.
Correct. That's
exactly right.
Exactly right. That's why the Gemara is being masber, the chiluk between the Mishnah and Peah, where it says that you could, right? Oh. Now the Gemara has a problem with this. Now we're on Lamed Tetzel and Base. Hotninon Chutz La'aretz. Now, one of the cases was you were going to plant it in Chutz La'aretz. Now, over there, there's not going to be any chiyuv to take Meiser at all. Not from the Iker or not from the Tosefos. Nothing.
Midrabon? No.
I don't know. Shani hi Chutz La'aretz bein le'Iker bein le'Gidul. Is there a difference? For sure not. The entire product, including the original, is exempt from the tithing obligation outside Eretz Yisrael. It says over here in footnote 1. Let's take a look. Produce that grew in Eretz Yisrael and then was taken to Chutz La'aretz and then was nigmar malachto, the rule is you're putter from Meisers. So if you plant a set which had not reached the stage of Gemar Malacha outside Eretz Yisrael, the entire new plant, including the original set, is exempt. Okay, so that's why. In other words, you have to follow. That has to be halacha, which has to be given here, right? So it's not like what we were just saying. That's basically the question. So just like this case was together with the other case, so your explanation doesn't hold water, as the Gemara wants to say, because it's not following through. It's not similar to the other case, which is parallel to it, which was Chutz La'aretz. That's the problem. Gemara is not overwhelmed by this question. And just turns around and says the same thing over again. Kol lo shanyo bein le'ikur bein le'gedulin. Where you plant outside Eretz Yisrael, you're right. There's no difference between the Ikar and the Gedulin. And that's why, But nonetheless, the way he says this in the English, I don't know how he gets it from the text, but the Gemara, in the English, it says, nevertheless, in the case of relinquishing ownership, that's Hefker, the Tosefta speaks of one who intends to keep the original and renders only the new gross ownerless, and that's just the way it is. Okay, the Gemara kind of like just, you have a good question, but we're not going to get overwhelmed by this question. Okay. In number 4, he's also going to have a summary, which we're going to obviously read. So number 4, he in the beginning, he writes, the Gemara concedes that the two cases are dissimilar. But since the Gemara has established the Mishnah permits renouncing ownership of an untithed plant, provided he surrenders the entire plant, why does the Tosefta forbid rendering an entire plant exempt from Meisers by exporting it to outside of Yisrael? The Pnei Moshe answers that the rabbis penalize one who replants sets outside Eretz Yisrael, requiring him to tithe them before he does so, but they do not penalize one who declares his plants ownerless. It's some kind of a knas, because you shouldn't be sending your payers outside Eretz Yisrael, something like that.
Well, unless you're marking them. And then the poor people can take them.
Maybe. To summarize, here's the summary.
Yep.
The Gemara above 39a listed 3 cases where it's forbidden to evade Meisers. Again, we're trying to evade Meisers. But a different reason applies in each case. Number 1, replanting untithed sets that resemble turnips and radishes for the purpose of seed is osur because they've reached their goren, which we said meant they are they're going to be roy now to take maestros, but subsequently they're going to dry out and they won't be roy to take any maestros at all. So that's the first one. Number two, rendering one's untithed sets ownerless is forbidden even before the garn, but only if he keeps the sets and relinquishes ownership of the subsequent growths. That's a problem of bittul. Number 3. Replanting sets outside Eretz Yisrael is forbidden even before the Goren because they penalize one who exports untithed produce to other countries. So these are different nuances over here. Now, we have a Machlokes Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan in regards to a case here. It's in Trumas and Achala. It's if you took off Meisers from the row of the crop, but part of it you left untithed, and then the two portions came mixed together. So Rish Lakish says that the Tevel minority becomes bottle in the Chulin majority, like regular bittel. Rabbi Yochanan, however, says no, the Tevel does not become nullified. He says a mixture containing Tevel is not truly a mixture. Tevel can be removed by designating Maisres on it on using Tevel from another location, right? If you take mice, if you have a mixture of miser, of chulin and tevel, they're mixed together. Even if the tevel is a minority, but if I have outright tevel here on the outside, I put it next to it, so it's min hamukaf, and I say whatever miser were necessary, true, so miser were necessary in that tevel should be in this, and then I fix it. So it's completely fixable. And it's completely you can't apply bittel to it. That's what Bi'akron Shita. Since the tevel can be removed, it's treated as if it were discernible. Okay, be careful here. I'm being very careful here. I'm not calling this a davar she'yesh lo matirin on purpose. That's going to come in the next note. This point we're describing that it's whether it's shayach bittel on this miyut or not shayach bittel on the miyut. Rav Yochanan holds that the miyut is discernible. Why is it discernible? Because it's possible to be mafresh mimakam acher somachloi, and therefore it could be fixed, and it's not considered a mixture. It's not even considered a taruvus. Okay, that's under the oraisa level. And then the next bracket, he speaks this out, that this machlokas Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan is only in the Daraisa level. So we're saying that Rish Lakish holds its bottle midaraisa. Rabbi Yochanan holds it's not bottle midaraisa. But midarabonan, everybody agrees it's not bottle. Why? Because it's a davar she'yesh lo matirin. Now he has a svar. That svar of davar she'yesh lo matirin is a svar drabonan. This is a big chiddush to me. I didn't realize that this is the way this all worked. But if you look at the bottom note in 6, you'll see that's what he's doing over here. First paragraph, he's describing why it's discernible and therefore it's not considered a taruvas. And then in the brackets, he's describing on a drabbanon level, it's a davar she'yesh lo matirin. Okay? All right. So let's try to figure this out here. Adaita Rish Lakish du amar tevel bata baruba nicha. So now, what are we trying to explain over here? You're trying the Tosefta, again, we're trying to explain the case of the Tosefta, where you're trying to render the new growth hefker, but keep the original set, right? So we're saying you have to tithe the set before you replant it. When the fully grown plant is harvested, the set will become tevel, but the new growths will remain chulin, right? Because the new growths are hefker, so we call it chulin because it's hefker. There's no chiyuv on the new growths of trumas and maisras because it's hefker. So the original stuff was what is tevel, but by then the growths will have become the majority, and it will nullify the tithing obligation. So to prevent the bittul, so this whole svara that we're being masber is works out according to Rish Lakish, then it's shayach bittul by tevel and chulin, right?
You have to make the takana
to avoid that bittul. But al daite the Rabbi Yochanan do amar ein atavol bottle barayv. But according to Rabbi Yochanan, he doesn't hold that it's bottle, so there's nothing to worry about. We're never going to have bittul anyway. So yantem nachi yagdel v'yasul of yikulai. Why do you have to take the mice before you replant it? Go take the mice later on when it's fully grown. So that's the Gemara's kasha. Oy neymar. Here's a possible answer. Ma pligir b'yechon Rish Lakish. When do they argue? B'tevel shanit bal dvar toiro. That's if you're talking about tevel minatarva. But tevel shanit bal medivrehem. Ha'alma ma'idashat tevel bat barov. Maybe there Rabbi Yochanan will be maskim. Okay, and why is it drabbanon?
Nigmar v'lacho, not nigmar
v'lacho. Let's see, we're dealing with vegetables. Vegetables are only subject to tithing, min rabbanon. So he agrees that it'll become batal. Yeah, what does he say? That's what he says?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the alternative. In number nine, he said... In nine, he gives that as the alternative shot, correct? But the Gemara's point is that when a set is uprooted, it is not tevel under biblical law because it has not even reached Gemara Malacha. So it's tevel mid rabbanan. Okay. So now, let's just finish up over here on the next daf, on daf mem. Sorry. Just got a little bit more. Hasiv rabbar kohen kumli rabbi yaisi. So according to the Gemara's answer, everybody agrees that rabbinic tevel is nullified. Now the Gemara is going to try to disprove this. Hasiv rabbar kohen kumli rabbi yaisi. Hatninon, we have a mission to the contrary. This is a Mishnah in Challah 3:9. Ki yotze by zeisei mesik, shenis arvu and zeisei nikuf. Harvested olives mixed with gleaned olives. Right? Harvested olives, that's the one he harvests for himself, are subject to miser. Gleaned olives are the ones that are attached to the tree for matos levyayim, right? And over here he says, according to Rambam, gleaned olives are olives the farmer forgot. It's shikha. Others maintain they're deliberately left there for as peya. Whatever the pshat is, it means that there's stuff that he harvested for himself, and then there's stuff that he left for the aniyim. So we've got a mixture, I guess. Zeisei mesik shenis arvu im zeisei nikuf. You have a mixture. Invei batzer im invei oilolus. There it's clear. Oilolus, we all know what that is. That's grapes that belong to the aniyim, and batzer are the ones that I'm harvesting for myself. And again, they got mixed up. So what does it say? The law is, it says here in the English, that the harvested olives and the harvested grapes remain obligated in tithes. They remain. You have to take tithes off. So for loy tevel shenitmon b'divreim hu, isn't this only under rabbinic law? Why is it only rabbinic law? So it says over here in 6, very, very important note here. Wine and oil are biblically obligated in Mysras. Grapes and olives are not. Because the Pasuk says, Tirosh v'yitzhar. Other Rishonim say grapes and olives are included in the biblical obligation.
Tirosh v'yitzhar is grapes?
Is wine and oil.
Yeah.
So is grapes... And olives,
it's not
considered a chi of the arise. That's what it's saying over here.
Yeah.
Other Rishonim say it is included. So the Gemara is talking about olives and grapes are usually used to produce oil and wine. The Mishnah speaks of olives and grapes designated for that purpose. So they don't reach Gemara Malacha until they're converted to the liquid form. And the rabbis decree that they are obligated in Mishnah even before that point. Again, this is similar to what we said before.
Why isn't it
batal? It says that the rabbinic tevel is not nullified. That's the question. In other words, because number seven, I mean, what I would have said is that the stuff that's the aniyim's is the miut, and the stuff that's mine is the rov. But in number seven, he discards that as a possibility. He says, given that the Mishnah doesn't specify otherwise, it must be understood, including a case where the exempt produce, which is the aniyim's, is the majority, because it doesn't say otherwise. It says if it gets mixed up, and it doesn't say if the stuff that's mine, that's obligated, is the rov, then I'm mechuyev to go and be matrish. But if it's not the rov, I don't have to be matrish. It doesn't say that, so therefore, we assume it's across the board. Therefore, the Gemara asks the question, if it's only drabbanan, why isn't it batal? That's the question. So the Gemara rejects the proof. Amar Rav Mana, kayamte b'shemen zeisei mesik, shenisari v'hem shemen zeisei nikuf. You have to say, we're not talking about olives and grapes. We're actually talking about the oil and the wine. Even though it didn't say that, but we're going to say that that's what we're talking about. So all we did was we converted it into a case where it's a deraisa. And that's basically the Gemara ends. Okay? And with that, we'll end today's daf.